Hello and welcome to another episode of Consumer, the European podcast of the Consumer Choice Center. As always, I'm your host, Bill Wirtz, with Billy Joel's Pressure fading out in the background. This is the episode of August 5th, 2021, the first episode in August. I hope you're having wonderful summer holidays for those who can leave the country to do that. And I hope you don't get too much caught up in the COVID-19 restrictions that do apply as you are traveling. I have a wonderful episode for you this week. We will be talking to Frédéric Jolien, editor and contributor at Vauban Edition in Switzerland, and someone who has been in and out of the political world in Switzerland. We'll be talking about Switzerland's recent exit from trade negotiations with the EU. Also in this episode, we'll be talking about Amazon being fined by Luxembourg, so that's a topic close to home. And also, the World Health Organization has released a new report on vaping, and it's not a fan of it. So let's get started. So I want to get you started with this.
Amazon has been fined almost $900 million for breaking the European Union's data protection laws. It's the biggest fine ever imposed under the EU's privacy regulations and more than twice the penalty many observers were predicting. The online retail giant has been criticised in recent years for the information it collates from the shopping history of its customers. Amazon says the punishment isn't merited and that it plans to defend itself vigorously.
Of course, topic close to home. This was the Data Privacy Agency of the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg, my home country, which has fined Amazon €746 million for the fact that it has used data of its customers to advertise to them. This was not a data breach, but a data law breach. And Amazon insists that no data has been leaked to third parties. In my view, of course, companies should be fined if they breach the agreements between their customers and that company in terms of data being leaked to third parties that was not intended to be given to third parties in any way, shape or form. Agreements that you make with a provider, whether you have a subscription or whether you're just using the platform, that is something that is in the terms and conditions that you accept. We often have these conversations with platforms that we use that are free of charge, such as Facebook and Twitter. Again, there are terms and conditions when we use these platforms in the same way that these platforms can then decide which content curation they can do. In terms of like what you can tweet and what you can post on Facebook, there are restrictions because, well, you're using that platform and you're getting great service in return. So the question here is whether Amazon did something illegal as to misusing that data in non-accordance of these rules that they'd established themselves. But I'm fairly certain that is actually not the case. The European Union has now been using these GDPR privacy rules to fine big companies, usually from the United States. And this has been constructively done because the European Union is unable to get more low-tax member states to increase tax burdens on these larger companies. And so countries like Germany and France see this as unfair. And so they try to find different ways to attack these companies. Also because Europe has had this eternal complex over the fact that it doesn't have its own digital giants. Outside of Spotify, there aren't many European digital companies that actually are competing on the marketplace because the United States is just more interesting of a place for these tech companies to be created and to continue their operations. Now, these companies do have their anchors in Europe through which they sell their digital services or physical services. And the HQ for Amazon is in Luxembourg, which is why this agency is responsible for it. This will be fought out in court, and it will take probably quite a while for all of this to be settled. But I think ultimately the conversation needs to be about, is GDPR actually good for, well, the consumer? And also, does it actually hamper innovation? Because if you're in a small company and you need to abide by these same GDPR rules, then yeah, sure, Amazon can do that because they have a big compliance office with a lot of lawyers. But if you're a small company trying to get off the ground, Are these lawsuits really something you should be bracing yourself for? Data privacy should be about respecting the agreement between consumers and the companies they make agreements with, and not to establish rules that go beyond what consumers are expecting in the first place. I mean, all of you remember at the beginning of GDPR, we all received these newsletter updates like, well, this is how we're using your data and so on and so forth, which is more annoying than really useful at all in the first place. And also, when it comes to the conversation of targeted advertising, I don't really understand how this is such big of a problem, because when you switch on the TV, you get a lot of advertising and much of it is not tailored to you. You get advertising that is completely irrelevant to your personal consumer behavior. And the internet has given us this great advantage of tailoring advertising to our own needs so that you actually see ads that might be interesting to you, because you'll get ads no matter what, unless you pay premium for a service that offers this. And by the way, I encourage people to start paying for premium services to get rid of ads. Nothing against that. But those that run ads also are dependent on that ad revenue to make a living online, because a lot of consumers are still expecting things to be free. This is very true in journalism. Consumers are expecting things to be free, but they also don't want to see any ads. And eventually there needs to be an income stream that allows companies to survive. And I think targeted advertising, by the way, sometimes you see these ads like, oh, this is a polo shirt and it's for people who were born in January 95 or something like that. It's like the targeted advertising scheme is not as developed as you might think it is. Much of it is based on the fact that you have these cookie preferences and the cookies remember what you searched previously and then tries to advertise to you. And again, I don't think there's necessarily something wrong with that. Actually, companies should be encouraged to increase their use of these tools to make them more efficient, so that actually the advertising is diverse and actually entertaining. So I think in improving our advertising experience is something that we've already done. And now it is about finding out whether individual companies are really violating the law or whether these are just political tools to get companies punished for something that they shouldn't be punished for. In other news then, the World Health Organization has released a new report on vaping, and of course it is not a fan of it. There's already been a lot of coverage on this topic, and so I wanted to bring our friend Michael Landl from the World Vapers Alliance back on the program to discuss what the WHO has been up to. So Michael, I've been reading what the WHO, the World Health Organization, has been up to on vaping, and it turns out you've been busted. Vaping is very bad for everyone and people should stop doing it. WHO has decided we should all stop vaping. Vaping is not a good solution to the problem that is smoking. Do you have any response to that? Is the WHO wrong?
Of course they are wrong. I mean, this report in general ignores all scientific evidence. It ignores the experience of countries which already have progressive vaping laws and reduce smoking rates very fast by this compared to the other countries. And it ignores the experience of millions of vapers around the world who already know it is working as a smoking cessation aid. And to me, it seems like the WHO in general has lost our common goal out of sight to reduce smoking, and now they are focusing to fight vaping. So to me, this begs the question about the motivation, why they do it. And obviously, the name Bloomberg comes to our minds then.
So why, for the listeners who don't know, why does the name Bloomberg come up? What is the involvement of Michael Bloomberg?
So in general, he's a big anti-vaping ideologue. And in this specific report of the WHO, he even has a foreword and is the supporter of this report. And you can see his anti-vaping ideology all over this place. So basically the whole report is a list of already debunked myths about vaping, and they are prolonged again. And it's very dangerous for public health and for current vapers, but also for smokers who want to switch. If the WHO now decides to start a war on vaping, this will be detrimental to public health and the goal which we all follow, to beat smoking. And this report will be doing exactly the opposite, or at least if governments are following those recommendations, which we try to fight now.
Yeah, I think people also underestimate the influence of these organizations, because ultimately they can't make policy themselves. They can only give recommendations. But many countries that don't have public health bodies that do their own studies, they rely on the WHO to make decisions. And they are, you know, WHO has a very strong soft power in guiding policies, especially in countries where smoking rates are much higher than Europe, because WHO advises countries all around the world. How do you think, do you think there is a way to convince them otherwise? From what you've seen from WHO officials, can they be confronted with the facts and still change their minds?
I mean, the WHO itself is a very closed organization, lacking of transparency, and there is almost no way to get into it and raise our voices. I think the more successful way is to put pressure on local governments. Because they need to hear to their voters eventually, and vapers are voters as well. So that's why we try to raise their voices and give them a chance to be loud, and that politicians can't ignore them anymore. And this will also be part of our campaign in the next half year called Back Vaping, Beat Smoking, where we actually go to each or to a lot of cities in Europe, meet our members and enable them to be as vocal as possible so that the local governments are not following the WHO recommendations. And even on the European Union, we see that as well. So basically all new regulations always are referenced to WHO. So it is more than a soft power, I would say. But I think there is a path to push back. And this is on the local ground, I would say.
Yeah, a lot of people are having different summers going abroad. But Michael, you stay busy, and all throughout the summer, you'll be on the road and going to different cities. Now, where can people find the itineraries and how they can participate, and what exactly is going on during that tour you're doing throughout Europe?
So this bus tour is part of our Back Vaping, Beat Smoking campaign, and everybody can find all the information at backvapingbeatsmoking.com. And the idea is to go through the European cities and educate, first of all, the general public, also media, get them involved, tell them that vaping can save lives. And it's crucial now because TPD is also coming, and the WHO, and we are convinced that we can save 19 million lives in the European Union if politicians get the vaping regulation right in the next half year. So we want to go to the city itself and bring in our community to put pressure on the politicians and to fight back against all those crazy regulation recommendations.
But now let's move to the interview of this week. My guest is Frédéric Jolien. He's editor and contributor at Vauban Édition in Switzerland, and someone who's been in and out of the political world in Switzerland. We'll be talking about Switzerland's recent exit from trade negotiations with the EU. I apologize in advance for the bad audio. Frédéric was dealing with some technical issues, not least because of works that were being done at his neighbor's home. But I hope you find the interview interesting regardless. So Frédéric, there was interesting developments in the relationship between the European Union and Switzerland recently, negotiations that started in 2014 and then ended abruptly. The Swiss say this is because of the European Union. The European Commission says it's because of Switzerland. Switzerland doesn't want to have a more functioning relationship with the European Union. Because the Swiss population is so involved in all the political decision-making, is very much more inclined to be up to date on what's happening politically and internationally. How was that conversation had in Switzerland? How do Swiss people talk about this trade relationship with the European Union?
Hello, Bill. Thank you for inviting me. In Switzerland, it's very intense talking about politics. Like four times per year, we have to vote about five or six subjects, different subjects. So it makes that we have a really intensive discussion about a lot of different subjects. But actually, in terms of European trade union, is what had happened right now was not something that we had to discuss. It was something that the executive decided. and discuss with the European Union, and they stop the agreement that they were discussing for like many years already. Actually, it never stopped and it's never start because it's always discussion that continue to go on. The situation of Switzerland with, regarding European Union is very complicated because we are in the center of it. We are just a hole in this country, which is quite a country right now because we can see how centralized it's more and more. So we have a huge problem because we have to be friendly with our neighbors who are all around us. And we trade a lot with European Union, like it's our first partner. So we don't have this kind of situation that European Union has with America, because they deal with some subject about trading and that's it. Here we have much more other subjects. We have migration issues. We have discussion about the quality of the goods and services that we trade. And we trade much more. We are not just trading cars, we are trading everything. So the subject touch a lot of different things, and security as well, and army, because basically Switzerland cannot deal with its security without the European Union, because in like 2 minutes, they are in the center of our territory. Anyway, so the discussion is hard because it touches everything. And European Union like to make packages. They like to imply all the trade together and make it that it's hard to deal with everything independently, because they say that if you don't take that, we stop all the other things. So at the beginning, all these bilateral agreements were made in small packages, and now we want to change everything together, which is make much more complicated. Because there were like 3-4 subjects which it was almost impossible to agree, because the politician, the Swiss politician, knows about what the Swiss agree for and the politics, and what the European Union wants, which is completely different. One is the migration issues, which is huge. It's because we agree with European Union to accept the paper, the diploma of their person, so we can have a really good exchange of workforces. But we don't agree the way we accept foreigners in Switzerland as begin to be Swiss, how many social security they can have and they can opt for, and so it's, and about also the pension. So a lot of issues, a lot of problems, and they didn't find any agreement. And also, it was all about that, about migration, social security. If you take these two subjects, it makes the biggest. And actually, even the leftists in Switzerland, we are much more in favor of European Union in Switzerland. They say that the European Union is too right wing in terms of social security, because actually in Switzerland we have kind of workers agreements that the European Union will not agree with. So it makes that even in the left side of the political spectrum in Switzerland, they have a lot of people who don't want to get into European Union.
That is indeed very interesting how that develops. And do you think that the Swiss political system can eventually be compatible with a European Union system, which is so centralized and you know, it doesn't really let you vote on anything? I mean, in the Swiss system, there's always this recourse mechanism. There's always a referendum that can be started either by the opposition party or by an opposition group that's outside of parliament. Is there even a scenario in which the European Union could cooperate more deeply with Switzerland while simultaneously having this recourse option for the Swiss people to say, yeah, you just decided this legislative package, but we don't agree with this part? Does that even compute? Do those two things work together?
So the thing is, joining the European Union for Switzerland will be the most easiest things to do for politicians. It's like all these problems that we have with them, all this constant discussion, will be completely erased, because I mean, we will agree that the system and how they make the laws will be made in Brussels and not in Bern anymore. And we don't have to agree or disagree with, we are just participating with. But it's really easy. And a lot of politicians can see this future, because it match the reality they are facing. And the reality they are facing is like a lot of complex problems that will be solved in once. So, there is this part. The second part is, it's if we go in this way, we will erase a lot of what makes Switzerland Swiss. And particularly like discussing a referendum initiative about every small subject that we discuss in Switzerland, which could look very stupid for foreigners, because sometimes we discuss just like a very simple subject about like how many cats you can have at home. Well, I don't know, but everything can happen. Not everything, but it could, if enough people sign for it, we can vote about anything. And we don't have also a court of, constitutional court to disagree with a referendum or initiative. It must just have to have one subject, which is really important. You cannot vote for a law who make completely different issues. But mostly if it agree with very basic principle, you can vote about almost anything in Switzerland. So that will completely disappear if we join the European Union. And that, I think, it was the reason why the Swiss didn't agree to join the EU, because it's very different system than what was the European Union at the beginning, and even what our neighbors were doing, because there were more central governments. So we were quite unique in Europe, and we wanted to stay like this. But a lot of people, and mostly the French speaker in Switzerland, which is about like 25-30% of the population, were more in favor of joining EU, because basically it was the idea of joining a fraternity of countries in Europe, no more war, this kind of idea where like joining all together, being brother and sister.
Switzerland is in a unique position, an even more complicated position than the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom has a bit more trade options because it has so many connections across the world, and Switzerland is a bit, exactly, you know, and Switzerland is in, as a trading partner, the European Union is even more important to Switzerland than it is for the United Kingdom. Do you feel that the European Union is using its dominant position as a constant argument to have Swiss people agree with new positions? Because what I see in the referendums is that very often people vote in favor, but mostly because they are afraid that the European Union will cut its economic relationship with Switzerland. So, do you feel bullied? Do you feel put under pressure by Brussels?
We are bullied by the situation more than by the European institution, I will say. Because even if they don't want to bully, they have this situation where Switzerland is in the middle of a system. And if we want to trade like France trade with Germany, if we want to have this kind of situation, we should agree with a lot of other subjects. And yeah, it's hard to be treated the same and differently at the same time. And also because it could make like a discussion inside the EU about like, I mean, you trade like this with Switzerland. And actually England during the Brexit, they were talking about Switzerland a lot. They made video about Switzerland. They were really inspired by Switzerland, and it went into this point that the yes won. So they don't want this example to be what the other country wants to go for. So at one point they have to put the fist in the ground and say, okay, we don't want you to be that different than us. But yeah, we don't know where it can go, because we are afraid in every direction. Everyone is afraid. The companies are afraid because what happened if we stop from one day to another? The banks are afraid because they want, like the Swiss bank, were in the blacklisted by the European Union, and we barely came back to like normal situation. We are even not now. The banks are crazy. The industry, like the tourism, the research, like university research, are very scared because like a lot of, you know, in Switzerland we have really high university, which we have a big research plan, or in Switzerland, but founded all big part is founded by European Union. So yeah, it's a frightening scene, and it's hard to know what to do.
And that concludes this week's episode of Consumer. Thank you so much for listening. You can follow Frédéric Jolien at JolienF on Twitter. And of course, follow the Consumer Choice Center at Consumer Choice C. As always, I'm your host, Bill Wirtz. See you Thursday. You have to learn.